Sit back and relax. It's time to improve your financial lot in life. Produced at CFIS-FM Studios in Prince George, this is your tune-up. And here's your host, Deb Ross.
Hello and welcome. So very often at this time of year, we are making every effort possible to organize our financial situations for the new year. The last couple interviews I had to do with the New Year's resolutions, and a lot of those resolutions have to do with our finances. So I was looking for a little bit of a twist on financial management and financial organization. So today, my guest is Jill Chambers. She is a financial concierge. She's also the president and founder of a company located in Calgary by the title of Financial Concierge. She is with me today, and we are going to discuss her company, her passion. So thank you, Jill, so much for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule to answer some questions and to give us some pieces of your expertise. So first of all, if you could please lead us through what your career path, basically the journey your career path took to bring you to the place of what you do today.
Okay, I'd love to. My initial career was as a nurse. I trained at the University of Manitoba, so I have a Bachelor of Nursing. And I worked in a variety of settings, a lot of time in the community, particularly with seniors, as a Victorian Order of Nursing. I also worked with seniors in hospitals and with students and seniors. So they've always been pretty close to my heart. I also grew up surrounded with grandparents, so it's always been important to me. So I worked in nursing for many years in Manitoba, and then in 2007, I did a 180-degree shift, and I got into the financial services area. And what I found is I was still applying the same skills of collecting information, helping people figure out what they wanted to get done, coming up with a plan, implementing, reviewing, and starting over. When I was working at an investment manager firm in Calgary, I had a client come up and he said, you know, my parents are elderly, their health is failing, and they need someone to help them with the day-to-day money management. They don't need to give up all control, but they need someone to make sure they're getting the bills paid, explaining to them what that bank statement really means. So this fellow was a retired engineer. His name was Mel Head. And together we looked, and we couldn't find anybody that was doing this service. So Mel, being an engineer, put together an extensive business proposal, which he called Financial Activity Management in Later Years. And we pitched this to accounting firms and investment firms, and nobody was willing to take it on. So it kind of went on the back burner for several years. And this year, all of a sudden, or last year, sorry, 2018, I was unexpectedly in a different employment situation, and I thought, well, this is the time. I now had the opportunity to grab this concept and build it into a business.
So what an interesting concept then. So can you just briefly walk us through what your day-to-day business and the type of work that you're actually doing on a day-to-day basis with people?
Sure, Trish. If you were in the States, this would probably fall under the umbrella of daily money management, which is a recognized profession in the States. They've been around for over 20 years, but it's really unheard of in Canada. In Canada, if you have no assets, you fall into the social service basket. Or if you have significant assets, you have a million or more in investments, then banks and trust companies are happy to work with you. And what I work with is what I consider to be the 80% of people that are just regular Calgarians. So I offer a variety of services. Often the first intake point would be for document organization. People that are just swamped. They've got paper and statements and reports. And what are originals? What do they need to keep? How do they get all this stuff organized? So I work with them to create what I call a family playbook, which is basically a binder with numerous sections in it, organizing everything from their estate plans, sort of their will, their enduring power of attorney, their personal directive, right through to their online profile. How many different accounts do they have, and user IDs and passwords? So that's one main service. Sometimes after you've done that, the senior will say to me, you know what, I don't want to pay bills anymore. My husband or my wife did it all. I've never done it. I don't want to have anything to do with this. I don't even want to know what an ATM is. So I may take over and actually do the bill payments for them. Spend an hour or two a month making sure everything matches up. There's nothing fishy going on with the accounts or no double billing. And what has transpired in the last while is finding more and more seniors that have no one to name in their estate plan. They've outlived all their executors. They have no children. They have no family around. Or maybe they have kids, and as one client said, I wouldn't trust them to walk the dog. So people are faced with a quandary. In the old days, they could sometimes ask their lawyer to act as their executor or maybe their accountant. But that is very difficult to find anybody that will take on that role. So I'm surprised to find that this is such another significant niche for people who say, I don't have anybody. Where do I go?
Hmm. So what would a typical client meeting then, what would that look like? What would that be like for people who are, their interest is piqued right now?
Okay. Usually we would have a quick conversation on the phone just to make sure that they do understand the kind of services I'm offering and to get an idea as to what they're looking for. And then I would do an in-home face-to-face meeting with them, what I call a complimentary consultation, to really decide, okay, what is it, you know, what's the stage, where are they at, what can I help them with, are we a good fit? Because they have to, this is a big position of trust. I mean, they're going to be sharing some very private information with me, and they need to know I'm not some crank that's going to run off with their information. So a lot of that is having a conversation, letting them get to know me, what I do and sort of my credentials, my background, my police check, how they can have some level of comfort and trust with this stranger that's come into their home. If it's a fit, if there's something I can do to help them, if they decide, yes, they do want to engage me, then we set up a letter of engagement. We outline exactly what I'm going to be doing, what will the cost be, how long do I think this will take, and what will they have as an end product.
So all of the fees and expenses, those are just laid out completely straightforward in that meeting, or is that something that you have to take back, take a look at, and then discuss with the client at a later date?
Usually I can make a pretty good estimate of, particularly if I'm doing document organization, I have a pretty good idea how long it's going to take me to get all of this stuff together. So I give them an estimate, my billable rate is $150 an hour, and that includes everything. I'm not nickel-diming people for photocopying and postage stamps and phone calls and all this other stuff. We just do it. It's a flat $150 an hour. If, for example, the playbook looked like it was going to take maybe 4 hours to complete, I would give them that as an estimate. They would make a 50% deposit up front, so in essence of 2 hours of work, and I would get started. If I get into this and I get into the weeds and think, oh my gosh, there's just way more we need to deal with here, I would contact the client and say, listen, I think it's going to be more like 6 hours than 4 hours. Are you okay with that? Or conversely, I get to the end, I've finished the project, and I meet with the client and say, hey, you know what? It only took me 3 hours. It only took me 4 hours. So they would never be charged for more than the work actually entails.
Well, it's good to hear that you're straightforward with the clients about that. That is something that I think is a frustration for a lot of us consumers, particularly when we're dealing with something that we're not familiar with, whether it's paperwork, documents, and you have a level of expertise that not everyone has. And it is very unique, the service that you're offering. So I think it's very positive that your fees are very upfront for people to be able to process and understand and be communicated with clearly about that. So what type of safety precautions and insurance, if you will, do you have in place to protect your clients and, of course, to protect yourself?
Mm-hmm. I carry professional liability insurance because I do have a financial designation. I'm a certified financial planner. So I have my professional liability or errors and omissions insurance through my professional association, and I'm covered for up to $2 million. I'm also accredited by the Better Business Bureau because a lot of people will go there first. particularly seniors or their families. Like, have there been any reports about this company? What's going on here? So we're a newer company at this point. I still need to get some reviews posted, but we have been accredited by the Better Business Bureau, and people can find us on their website. In terms of other associations, I'm also a member of the American Association of Daily Money Managers. So this is a group that's been around for over, I think this is their 20th anniversary in the States. So they also have a very detailed code of ethics that we comply with. I have the code of ethics I comply with through my, as a certified financial planner. And all of my staff have to submit to a police background check, including a vulnerable sector report. So this means because we are seniors, we could be working with them individually at their homes to make sure there has been nothing in anybody's record. And I also ask my staff to submit an annual credit score. I don't want anybody who's having issues financially to be on my staff. No temptation to dip your hand into the cookie jar. And also, because I'm a nurse, I want them all to have an annual influenza immunization. I don't want to be any of us taking anything into our seniors or bringing something home with us.
I think those are all very wise points. They're an interesting sort of potpourri of safety precautions, but I can't help but laugh that the flu vaccine is a requirement for your employees, and yet I think it shows such a level of compassion and care on a very real level for your clients.
Well, I haven't had any pushback yet, but we'll see what happens. In terms of the staff I have working as well, Debbie, I like working with mature, professional, retired women, and that's who my staff are. They come from a variety of backgrounds, and they have all been very good at managing their own financial affairs. So they could be a dental hygienist, a dental hygienist, an IT professional, an HR consultant, a paralegal, an accounting technician, for a whole variety of areas.
So you have very well-qualified staff.
Yes.
Wonderful. And each of your staff members, then, they do take time to actually go and visit with the clients in their homes?
Yes, wherever we can. Now, I have had a client who lived many, many hundreds of miles away. So we actually did a lot of our stuff by phone call and by email, and we only met together twice. Okay. But if I was dealing typically with a senior and we were helping them with their bill payments on a monthly basis, we would go to their home and we would work with them there. Maybe they still want to write the checks out, and physically are able to do that. Families like that, because it's another set of eyes that's checking on mom or dad every once in a while. And I always want to know who a contact person is, so that if I have any questions or concerns, I know who to contact.
Wonderful.